What's going on, guys? Welcome to the latest episode of River City 93, brought to you by Roughneck Scarves, Icarus FC, and of course, For the Culture. This is your host, as always, Elliot Barnes, joined me as two men that can probably defend better on set pieces and clearances. It's Shadir and Matt. How are you guys doing?
Hold on, I'll be right back. I gotta wash all this butter off my hands.
Oh, God.
It hurts. Two goalkeepers, man. Oh.
Yeah. Look, if there's any game you want to show to, like, fans of the game, it's not this game for goalkeeping-wise. Like, this had howlers written all over it. It was not a good game. We're recording this right after the game.
Oh, yeah.
So, we got all the anger out of us some way. It might be a little bit of anger that sneaks into the podcast, but wasn't a good game. But before we head into our review of the game and upcoming game for this week, first of all, we're going to give our respects to Coach Bulo, former coach and player of the Richmond Kickers. For all of those who don't know, he suffered a stroke and fell down a flight of steps this past week, and he's in intensive care right now. So our thoughts and prayers go out with him. There will be a link to his GoFundMe. I think the last time I checked, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, is over $80,000.
Yeah, $82,107 as of right now.
Yeah, so definitely I think the goal for all of us is at least get that over to the 100,000 mark. But, yeah, our thoughts and prayers goes out for Coach. I'm going to be quiet right now and let you guys say any words that you have about Coach Bulo.
I mean, Bulo, I know him not only as the head coach for the Richmond Kickers, but as a fellow youth Richmond Kickers coach. When I was coaching for the Kickers, there were a lot of times that we came across each other. He's an awesome guy. He brings life into any environment he's in. He's a wonderful guy, and watching him coach, I've learned a lot from him. Watching him coach, watching the players that he's coached and how they've developed, and it's just it really hit me as a shocker when I found out on Monday to find out what happened. I pray for him, and I pray that he comes out of this okay, and that we'll see him again out there coaching somewhere one day.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the nice guys. I mean, it's overused term a lot of times, but think about this. We run into a lot of players over the years, and sometimes they'll. You put on the smiley face after a game or whatever, but you can also tell sometimes they're doing the fan service because they're told they have to and not necessarily because they want to. Bulo is never that way. He wasn't that way as a player. As soon as he got here, the first time around in 2006, he took to the fans in the stands. He's a little bit of a showman on the field, as well. So he definitely won fans quickly that way, but. You could tell he actually enjoyed those interactions. You think back, when he was coaching, he would go out of his way to come over to the tailgates and everything. He didn't have to do that. He didn't need to take time out of the pregame to come see how fans were doing. He didn't have to come over postgame and after some of those bad losses, basically apologize. Hey, sorry guys, we'll try to do better. You don't have to do that, but you chose to do that. Still, and the last time I ran into him was last preseason. He wasn't with the team anymore, and he was still out there at preseason game, kind of watching because that's what he enjoys doing. He wanted to see how the guys were doing and everything, and he's talking to some of us there. Just being one of the guys, so good guy. Obviously, you never want to see this happen to anybody. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to pretend like I know what all goes into any of this. But I'm hoping he comes out the good side of this, and we'll see him back around town with good upbeat smile on his face pretty soon too. And hope he'll be able to see us wearing the Arsenal looking jerseys because he got a kick out of that when he saw us.
Yeah, he most definitely did. I think one of my fondest memories of Coach Buelow is when the first Indy Derby was in Richmond, and he had on the kente cloth dress shirt. And I was like, oh, this guy gets it. But, like, if there's anyone that encompasses Richmond and youth soccer here in the RVA area, it's definitely Coach Buelow. So, once again, our thoughts goes out to him, and we wish him all the best in a speedy recovery. So with that being said, guys, are you guys a little bit better to talk about this disappointing game that we had?
There was a game today.
Look, we just gonna put it out there. The entire DMV, for those who don't know what the DMV is, that's Maryland, DC, and Virginia, took L's the entire weekend. DC United lost 4-1. Loudoun United lost 2-1. Richmond lost. Maryland Bobcats lost. Maryland University lost, UVA lost. It was bad, okay? It was bad across the entire region.
Look, bad weekend for the DMV.
Look, all I'm going to say before we get into the game is that if your fellow Manchester United fans were really true fans, they would have stormed Beckham Stadium too and ruined that place, just like they shut down the game over in England today. So really, it's Man U's fault. That's what I think. That's really the honest assessment of all this, and we can definitely know that.
Yeah, that was something. So first of all, before we go into this game, let's talk about this lineup, man. Like this, we were all a little bit shocked because at first I was trying to figure out who Aviza was. I was like, is this a fullback? Like, is this someone new? And then I forgot all about wait, this isn't Akira, this is the goalkeeper. And that tells you how long Akira has been in between those sticks for Richmond. Like, I think this is his first game he hasn't started in, almost a year and a half, right?
Yeah, the last one was the last Toronto game in 2019 when Rice played.
Yeah. Yeah. So that lets you know, how long Akira's been a forefront. So, look, I know on Twitter we were going to give it out if he's a hard time, and rightfully so. Like, he did not have a good game. He did not have a good debut. But I do feel as if Akira's in this game, one, the defense is a lot sturdier. And also, I feel like the two shots that he had, Akira holds on to those, man. But we'll talk about those when we get more into the game. But also, we also had Alex getting his start out on the right wing. And that was pretty much it. That was all the changes we had. We also have Pavone also coming in as a right back.
I have Vignoles in for Victor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Vignoles also came in getting his debut. Any surprises to you guys about this starting lineup?
For me, I liked what I saw from Vignoles when he came on at the end of the Greenville game. But from what I saw today, it didn't feel like that worked very well. And not that he didn't do well, but he didn't fit with that system. And I think I personally, if Vignoles was going to come in, it would have been to push Terzaghi up. So when I saw him sharing the midfield with Terzaghi, I started to smell a little bit of smoke. I tried to, I said, okay, I guess it's going to be okay. But it's as I had suspected, it was not a good matchup. It didn't balance out the midfield for me. And that was, to me, the biggest doozy that I saw in the lineup when I first saw it.
Yeah. When I saw the lineup, I did not see Aviza starting, but I was like, okay, whatever. I think he can still be a good keeper. Obviously, nobody foresaw coming today. But I figured he was probably going to get a few games throughout the year. So I was like, oh, okay, well, a little earlier than I expected, but whatever. Right there. I think last week we kind of figured Oleks was going to get a start somewhere up front. So again, that wasn't too surprised. And Schneer was saying, I was a little surprised that Vignoles in for Falk, in particular, just because. I mean, he's literally started every game since Darren has been here so far. So I was surprised that he was the one who made way for Neil. In terms of formation, I thought when I saw it just on paper, I was like, okay, well, it seems like we're planning on having a lot more of the ball and doing a lot more attacking you know, and maybe that must be the reason, you know, we're making this change. That way we have another guy who's, you know, a lot more comfortable, you know, holding the ball, controlling the ball, you know, creating chances with the ball. We must be looking to be able to, you know, push, play, you know, less on the counter and more in a possession style attack. I was wrong.
We were all wrong. Yeah. I mean, the first, 12, 15 minutes, it really did look like Richmond was in the game. There was a lot of pressure going on. You saw Alex, like, he was giving Allen a lot of trouble out there. There's a lot of times Alex would let the ball come into him. He would make a sharp turn, and he would put on the burners. He even had a shot on goal that, you know, just went right past the goal. But outside of that, like, right after that chance, it all went downhill quick. Like,
yeah, like that first 10, 15 minutes, the team was doing a really good job high pressing. I think Bolaños took the ball off of a defender, you know, a couple times, you know, early on. You know, I think, you know, Emmy got in there and, you know, made a defensive contribution and, you know, took the ball off somebody, you know, high up. So I was feeling good those first, you know, 10 or so minutes. I was like, okay, we're just going to be able to, you know, outclass and, you know, out physical these guys. It's going to come.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. It's like, I don't know if we spent up all the energy in the first 15 minutes, because after that, it was like little holes started popping up when Fort Lauderdale just started just passing through us. And I'm pretty sure you guys started realizing this trend as well, of our midfield will press up, and then Fort Lauderdale would just make 1-2 passes, and then they're in the middle of our midfield and on the break. And that's literally like how the first goal came about. It's like, it was just a big gap in the middle of the midfield, and they just made a gap on it. They took advantage of it.
Yeah, basically, you're looking at a situation. I mean, there was a big alarm bell early on where Luke Pavone kind of saved us on it, where Terzaghi goes in to press high, and literally on the screen, he's the only red jersey in the shot as he's chasing the back line to try and win the ball. And they just pass the ball around him and pick one long to Evans. And Evans is in behind. And Luke Pavone just chases him down and hooks around him to get the tackle in. But that was a big, big, big alarm bell. And that is what happens when only one person presses. And it created that domino effect afterwards. Once they got past Terzaghi, then you have another player getting pulled out of position and another and another and another until they just got themselves with that long ball over to Evans.
Yeah, that's very much true. I mean, we got to do it. Let's go ahead and break down this first goal about how this all happened. I mean, literally, everything went right for the most part. I mean, Zaka got in there. He had like a half clearance at it. Avon had a half clearance. Chrysler had a half clearance. And then it's like a fumble shot on goal. It looked like a very comfortable save. Like Avisa dives properly. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, it like fumbles out his chest, hits his feet. And there's the Fort Lauderdale striker putting it into the back of the net. And I'm not gonna lie, I was cussing up a storm. Cause I'm just like, yo, you have to, like, at that moment, man, you gotta be able just to have like that secure chance to make the back line that even feel as if, like, all right, the guy behind us is just as good as Akira. Like, I don't know if you thought he was playing for Richmond or he back for OCB, but it wasn't good.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely seemed to still have the stink of OCB on him, you know, right then. There's no way around, you know, staying in. That one is, you know, pretty much all on Avisa. I will say, you know, you're right. You know, Zaka, you know, came back. He was able to kind of poke away a little bit. You know, Ivan was in there. He was able to, you know, do a little bit of work, but, you know, just the numbers, you know, coming up. What I noticed, you know, watching the replays is that Monty nowhere to be seen and was really slow getting back, you know, help. And that was coming down you know, our left side, you know, and Vigneault also, you know, is, you know, kind of a little bit slow, you know, getting back. So normally we have Victor in that spot who is really good at cleaning up, you know, just a lot of mess and a lot of garbage, and you know, he wasn't there. So while, you know, the other guys, you know, did what they could with it, there was still an extra guy, you know, out there where the ball popped out to initially for the first shot. And, you know, again, good initial save, terrible rebound, and then, yeah, the easiest to tap in right after that. So team effort, but obviously when you spill it like that, the goalkeeper is always going to take, you know, the overwhelming brunt of the blame, and you should.
Yeah, and I mean, also, like, look, we all love Luke on this podcast. Luke is a hometown favorite, but we also know Luke's limitations. I mean, me, Tina, and Matt, we were all talking about it before this. Luke pretty much left the guy on side. So, I mean, we'll go ahead and talk about it now. What is it going on with Luke at that right back position? I mean, granted, he did play a lot of center forward like that for us last year. The year before that, he played a lot of fullback. But the mental errors, I mean, two of his best defensive play in this game, the slide tackles, came off of him creating mistakes. You know, what is it going on with Luke at that position?
I mean, I think it's just an issue of lack of preparedness. I mean, he mentally, a lot of times when you go into a season and you have a role, mentally as a player, you dive into that role. You get yourself in a situation where that role is what your mind is set to. And if something changes, to make that role have to change drastically at any given moment in the season without any warning, it's really tricky for you to recalibrate your mind. So at this stage, with the with all of the fullbacks that we had, I really feel like Pavone was literally going to be a utility player all around the field. And I think he mentally was preparing himself for that through preseason, through, you know, the beginning, the first game. And all of a sudden for it to change to you're the starting right back, it's very jarring. And I think what we're seeing right now is a Luke Pavone taking a long time to recalibrate himself. It's a lot harder and takes a lot longer than one may think to do that, especially when your role has completely changed. So I wouldn't say it's an issue of we need to be patient. I think this is another situation just like last year where an injury has completely derailed something with regards to the performance for the team. And Luke Pavone is on the front line of the reception of that derailment.
Yeah, I think that a little bit of it is, you know, you're right. I mean, he's been training at right back, but he's clearly not, you know, natural right back, you know, whatever that, you know, really means, you know, anymore anyway. What I'm seeing is, I think he's actually getting burned when he's thinking too much. Because, like, you know, we saw today, you know, when he's making the instinctual, oh crap, I just got to hustle and get back and make the slide tackle and clean this up, he can do that well, right? You know, when he's just having to react to things, he can do that. But I think when he's, you know, trying to, you know, make sure he's tracking the runner, when he's trying to make sure that, you know, he's not letting somebody get back behind him, you know, something else, you know, ends up missing as a result, you know, of it. You know, so I don't think that's something that's really going to be able to be fixed right away. I think we need to hope that, you know, Calvo, who's, you know, with, you know, the team now, you know, he's going to be able to get match fit sooner rather than later. We need to hope that Javonte will be back soon. You know, I don't know what Ian's status is. You know, I don't know if I can donate, you know, he needs some, 38-year-old, you know, knee ligaments or anything like that. I'm happy to, you know, give them to him if that's going to help him get back, you know, sooner. I don't know how good those ligaments would be anymore, but
Shadir, you're the fittest one on the podcast. Donate your ACLs. You're not using them.
Oh, no, I'm using them at work now, and I don't know if he wants mine anymore.
For the team, man. Come on. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how far the Luke Pavone right back experiment can really take this team.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, like you said earlier before we started recording, Matt, Luke is a player that for 20 minutes hurt, he's amazing. He's great. He's a utility man. But for 90 minutes over multiple games, you can kind of see the shortcomings in Luke's game. We saw that definitely today where they pretty much just shifted Edwards out onto his side. And they told Edwards, like, go at him and make him think and make him have to make the decision of either covering you or covering the overlapping fullback. And, you know, we saw that a lot. But the rest of the first half, man, it just looked like Richmond was devoid of ideas. You know, I can't really think of a really positive moment after the goal came in the 20th. Maybe that's just the anger blocking it out for me, but it didn't feel like any other big moments happened before halftime. Any thoughts on the rest of the first half for you guys?
I think there was one other, you know, decent moment that we had. I don't think, you know, surprise to anyone who would actually be spending their time listening to this, came when Emiliano Terzaghi actually got on the ball. And you know, you think back to that goal he scored, you know, last year against them, and that, you know, beautiful goal, you know, from kind of the side of the 18. You know, it almost looked like he was trying to pull that off. You know, again, obviously not quite the same turn, but he, you know, really ripped the ball from about the same spot, you know, put it on target, you know, made the keeper make a save. In retrospect, probably should have, you know, noticed that the keeper did not make that save very cleanly at all, you know, foreshadowing for the, you know, the future. But, you know, he took that, you know, rip, you know, on it. And the only other moment, you know, I could really even recall from the, you know, latter portion of the first half is he had that free kick that he put way over the goal. But we were able to draw a foul, you know, about 25 yards out, you know, dead center or so. But yeah, the good things, you know, surprise, surprise, tended to happen when he was on the ball closer to the goal than farther away from the goal.
Yeah, we got to work on that. I'm pretty sure Darren is thinking of something to try to get him closer to goal, because right now it's not looking like it. And, you know, before we get into the second half, man, like, I know Hernandez's nickname is El Tanque, but homeboy right now looking like a Ford Pinto. Like, I'm not seeing anything from him. Like, not a shot on goal, not an attempted shot on goal. He has an assist in his name, but that was a mistake because Bologna just took the ball off of him. Last three games, I have not seen anything that has convinced me that he should be starting right now. Am I reading too much into it? What do you guys think about it?
No, I agree with you. I haven't seen – I don't know if it's taken him a while to get into things, but even in our 3-0 win against New England Revolution 2, I did not see – enough of Gonzalez to really feel like, okay, he is our cemented center forward. He is our number nine. He's our hold up guy. I think his hold up play is lacking, and because it's lacking, his lack of pace is getting exposed. The fact that he I'm sorry, but he has no pace whatsoever. From what we've seen, you described it best before we started performing. He looked like he got a 50-pound weight on his back when he's running. And if you're not going to hold up play well, if you're not going to be that big, solid, commanding center forward that'll hold up play well, you've got to have pace. I mean, it's one or the other. You can't have neither. And at this situation, I'm not thinking enough from him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, most definitely. He just doesn't. And I'm not saying Hernandez is a bad player. He just it just looks devoid of place. I mean, we had Alex in the middle or Stanley. It looked a little bit more freer, a little bit more looser. But and also the formation does not help him out any time, because when he does get the balls in his feet, by the time he does and looking to lay it off and make that move into the box, he's swarmed by four or five guys, and by that time, he can't really do anything. I mean,
yeah. So I'm going to take a little bit of different, you know, tack on this than the two of you. So I guarantee if we go back and listen to what we recorded after the New England game, we were pretty happy with him, you know, after that game. So I think there's a little bit of revisionist history, you know, right there. But I do think that, you know, the way with the shape that, you know, we've been rolling out there the last two games, I don't know if that really fits him, you know, quite well, because I think he's El Tanque just because of, you know, his size more than his build, rather than actually being like a battering ram or anything. But you know, you look at it, okay, he's basically playing like a kind of a post up center forward kind of position, right? You know, and okay, that makes sense. You got your big forward up there, you know, let him play, you know, back to goal and everything. Great, you know, he can probably be able to, you know, fight some of that, but he ends up so isolated with the way we have the team set up right now, because Bolaños and either Bolduc or, you know, Olex, whoever is out there on the right, they're playing really wide most of the time. They're, you know, almost right there on the touchline most of the time. So who's he going to, you know, knock the ball down to? Emmy? Emmy isn't right up there, you know, close to him. Let's think about the, you know, the kind of one shining, you know, Hernan Gonzalez moment so far through three games. It's when he brought down, you know, that long ball from Victor Falk in the New England game. And yeah, I don't think he really passed it to Bolaños. Bolaños was tucked in right there, you know, on him, where he was still able to essentially take the ball off his foot and he'd be able to make a positive play off of something that Hernan did. Right now, you know, how often do we see it where it's him and there's almost no other kicker in the shot on the screen? You know, so I think he, you know, yes, he needs to do better. I don't think anybody's going to argue that. I don't think he'd argue that either. But I think a little bit of it is how, you know, the team is set up at the moment isn't really conducive to his skill set right now.
Yeah, you're probably right. That's also the angry me talking.
I
just want goals.
And one thing I do notice is that there's a running theme here with single players being isolated, and what you see a formation of 4-1-4-1. All the ones are seriously and alarmingly isolated on the field. Moran and Gonzalez were both throughout the entire game desperately isolated. And Gonzalez up front, I mean, at the end of the day, he doesn't have pace and he's being swarmed. There is no use. He cannot provide anything for you. Yes, he's going to hold up play. But one thing is, yes, I didn't see too much in terms of the hold up play today, but I don't feel that we would have seen a lot of it. I don't think Lukaku could have held up play in this situation because of the fact that he was so isolated. And literally, like you said, Matt, every time the ball came to him, and he, by the time he could even hope to pass the ball to someone because someone finally came within range, he swarmed. So, and we go to the same thing further back with Moran. He's by himself in the midfield, and every time we're attacking or defending, he has to do the job of three or four people. And it was not a good setup at all for either our defensive midfielder or our center forward.
Yeah. All right. So we're just going to move past the first half. We're just going to go straight into the second half. I mean, there was an early chance on goal that I felt like it was right around the 58th minute. I swear, it was Emmy again.
There was one in like the first 2 minutes of the half.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. Like right near the corner where Emmy just literally just shoots it. And I'm still trying to figure out like how this ball does not go in the back of the net. But then after that, it's like after we had that chance, it was like Forlato just took over possession again. And I don't know. I'm seeing this theme out of Richmond where if we can't get the long ball to work, like, if the long ball option isn't there, then we try to go for the short ball. But that doesn't work if you can't complete a simple 5-yard pass and try to possess the ball up the field. And you would think with Neil and Emmy on the field, two of our better ball controllers, you would think, like, a lot of these balls would just be sharper. In three games, it hasn't felt sharp. It hasn't felt sharp at all, and we lost a lot of possession.
So one of the things that I've sort of come to believe over the last couple of weeks, especially, I think this team is set up really well to play from ahead, and is not necessarily built to chase a game and play from behind very much. Because even in the New England game, we were playing a very effective counterattacking kind of system. You can do that no matter what, but I think it's going to be usually a lot more effective if the other team is having to push forward, if the other team is having to try to find a goal themselves, because then we can send Bolaños, we can send Anderson, we can send Boldock, we can send whoever is up there just to be able to burn at them and be able to exploit space in those scenarios. But if we're down, the other team would just sit back, and when they're sitting back, it looks like there's been no ideas of what to do. It's still okay. Well, let's still try to kick it out wide to Bolaños and see if you can dribble four guys and get something to happen. Luckily, kind of did happen later on today. But I don't think that's necessarily a sustainable strategy.
Yeah, no, it doesn't look like a sustainable strategy. I mean, that was one of my talking points coming in this year about we need to have like a plan C, D, E after plan A and plan B doesn't work. And right now, I feel like the team is kind of struggling for that. But we did have a happy moment somewhat in the game where Neil's shot on goal kind of crept past the goalkeeper, and he was just like, I'm just going to kind of push this out. Like, I don't know what was going on with the goalkeepers in this game, but Neil gets his first goal. We're claiming it here on River City 93. And that's his first goal for the Richmond Kickers. I'm taking it. But it does happen after we had the substitutes come on. I mean, Fleck kind of recycles his ball and just pushes right back into Neil, who, without a second thought, takes a shot. It looked like a weak shot, but it goes in the back of the net.
Yeah. I think this all starts from Bolaños out on the left. Somehow manages to squeeze between two players, sidesteps another one, and then he gets that pass out to Falk to avoid another defender. So, I mean, I do feel that this goal, Bolaños really, really had played a big part in this. Yes, Falk looks up, and then Niels is right there into space and receives the pass and takes a shot. And, yeah, I mean, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. They gave him the space to take it. Why not take it? And the goalie messes up. I mean, that's just a fluke from the goalkeeper. It happens. To be honest with you, I'm not gonna put too much on. I wasn't going to put too much on the goalkeeper until he did almost the same thing again later on. But it was a small light of hope in that moment, and to see it. Okay, now we're tied 1-1. What can we do to clean things up? To try and create better chances, and it didn't come. And again, it was from that same situation of our two midfielders being in no man's land and not being able to affect attack or defense effectively.
Yeah, I mean, I do appreciate Zamudio, pulling out his Rob Green fan card, during the game, today. I was at that game and had no idea the ball had really gone in first, just like this, where I was like, wait, did that really go in? Did that really, happen? Same sort of reaction, little different setting, of course. But yeah, like Schneer said, you miss all the shots you don't take. And as we've seen many times, in soccer, balls can take weird bounces. Balls can, just randomly go through goalkeepers for no good reason. Whatsoever. So sometimes you have to take that shot. It might not be the analytics XG preferred shot or whatever. But also, if you show the willingness to take that shot from 25 yards out, eventually the defenders are going to step out a little bit further from you, and that might open up a little more space for somebody to kind of slip in behind to be able to make a run into the box and get a look that way. So. Even if that shot is safe, I don't mind him taking that.
Yeah, not at all. And I mean, even after that chance, so after we scored that goal, it's kind of like the Richmond Kickers kind of found their footing. I mean, granted, it's late, but they kind of found their footing because from then on, Chris Cole, who just came in for Monty, who got hurt, we're wishing him the best. He has a danger shot, although they slips past the goalkeeper. No one can really get there. Nils tried to get there, but he wasn't getting there quick enough, and that kind of gets shut out. And then O'Allen's with the header. Two chances right there. You score those two goals. You're kind of on top of Fort Madison. You're on top of Fort Lauderdale. The momentum swinging your way. Those two chances don't go in. Then we get to the 84th minute where I was ready to flip a table. Comes to a corner kick, and this is one of the things that irritates me as most as a soccer coach is put a man on the post. If your goalkeeper is going to come out and try to be big boy and grab the ball in the air or try to like defend that 6-yard box, put a man on the back and front post. And right before the play, you can see like there's a player on that back post. Now, when the ball is kicked, he runs up and everyone's like, oh, snap, he's there. And Chris Cole draws back to where Fort Lauderdale striker was. And I can't say if – because Aviza, he played games last year. He's not a new goalkeeper. I mean, he's new to Richmond, but he's not, like, brand new. Like, this isn't his first ever game. You got to be more dominant in your box, and you have to, you know, yell kind of at your defenders, like, hey, you got to – got to recognize the moment and realize that, hey, Chris Cole just came on the field. He's new. He's kind of like bright-eyed right now. Hey, step out to him, kind of shut down, close down the space, and don't just give him a free shot on goal. And none of that happens. And he just gets five-told for the goal. Am I missing something here, guys? Like,
At this point right now, it's a situation of, first of all, not a single person touched the ball before it gets to
Hundal.
What was the player's name? Hundal. When it gets to Hundal, not a single player touched the ball. So that ball was at perfect heading height. So why is, if a Fort Lauderdale player isn't contesting that ball, why is a Richmond Kicker defender not contesting that ball? So at the end of the day, yes, the goalkeeper gets exposed on the shot, but I do feel that the entire defense let him down by allowing that ball to literally bounce through. Because when a ball bounces through, that to me is you 14 and lower travel soccer or rec soccer. The ball should never bounce off of a corner kick. A head, foot, something should get on it to either put it in the back of the net or clear it out. That's what happens when a ball goes in from a corner kick. In this situation, bounces right past. Hundal has time to settle the ball, bring it down, and slot the ball between our goalkeeper's legs.
Yeah,
not a single player step to him.
Part where he's able to, you know, chest the ball down and bring the ball down and then, you know, take the shot, that's a far, you know, worse offense to me than even, you know, Aviza, you know, getting megged or whatever happened to him, you know, right there. Like, you know, how does a guy, you know, still, you know, either inside the six or just outside of, you know, the six, you know, have that much time, you know, directly off of a corner kick field to, you know, do that? If he hits it first time, okay, he still shouldn't be that open, but, you know, more power to him, you know, than if he, you know, hits it first time like that. But that's way too much, you know, time. You know, somebody lost a mark somewhere. Somebody, you know, never had a mark there. Something went terribly wrong in that, you know, moment. And yeah, I mean, it gave me a little bit of flashbacks, you know, to that very first Lansing game, you know, when almost the same sort of thing, you know, happened. I don't remember who scored on it, but yeah, some, you know, very sharp angle, you know, somehow got through Akira. You know, we don't need to talk about the rest of that, but. Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I don't want to put all the blame on the kid if he's I mean, granted, he came from OCB, so maybe he's still trying to work on that bad juju in him. But this was not a good debut for him. And I'm pretty sure he's feeling kind of bad about it, but it just wasn't a good debut for him in this game. The rest of the game, nothing else really happened. I think even at one point, I think in the 90 minute when they announced there was 8 minutes of extra time, I was like, I'm going upstairs to get ready to record because I just can't watch this anymore. It just didn't feel like we were going to get back into it, man. I mean, Darren substitutes today. I think he got the substitutes not right, be honest. I mean, Emmy was kind of a creator on the field. I can understand why you left Neil on, because Emmy got replaced with Flock. You might want to start with that midfield. Okay, that's fine. But then to take Neil off after he just scored, he didn't look injured. He didn't look like he was gassed. Oh, Alex, the one, matter of fact, he looked like he was shot. He couldn't move because his leg looked all bandaged up. And he was ready to score the header with the shin guard in his right hand. And then we kind of went to this empty bucket of Zaka, Flop, Bolduc, Bolaños out on the wings, and then Stanley and Alex up top. And once that happened, Fort Lauderdale was just like, okay, we're just going to run through this. So what are we going to do? You know?
Yeah. I'd, to be honest with you, the two goals were howlers. I'd say the first goal was a howler. The second one, any professional you give that much time can do damage. So I wouldn't put all the blame on our goalkeeper for that. I do feel Ibiza does have the potential to be good because he did have a potential save of the week save at the end there with that ball. I mean,
it's maddening that he makes that save but not the others.
Exactly.
Makes zero sense. It makes zero sense. I'm sorry if that was loud and listening.
I mean,
but that makes zero
but
sense.
But I mean, here's the thing. The first one I feel is the big fault. The second one, I think it's a situation of don't give a good player that much time. Hands down. Now, when you have a player barreling towards you, you know, who's wide open, like, because that pass, that through ball into space for him, there was no way Ibiza could come out and get to that before the striker. So he had to wait for the striker to take that touch. And I think his timing of coming off of his line once the striker took that touch to make himself big and to get a hand on it and knock it over rather than letting it go in, I think showed signs of, you know, his timing and goalkeeper skills. But it wasn't a good debut for him, all in all. I wouldn't say it was a terrible debut, but it wasn't a very good one.
I think it's fair to say it's closer to terrible than bad.
Yeah, it was terrible. All right, well, we got a quick ad break right now for you guys. The Red Army needs your help. On April 8th, the volcano of La Safir erupted on the island of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. This resulted in up to 20,000 people being evacuated, infrastructure being damaged, leaving them without water or electricity. Gas, ashes, and tremors from the eruption continue to significantly hamper the evacuations and other humanitarian efforts. To provide aid to these affected, the Kickers players have started a GoFundMe that will go towards logistics and supplies to provide relief to those affected. Please donate to the GoFundMe. The link will be down in the description down below and help those out in need. So, as we always say, if you listen to us, support those in need. Like we say on every podcast, and if you ever listen to River City 93 or Can I Kick It, we always talk about giving flowers to people while they're here, and the community in need is helping us, even though it might not be affecting you directly. You know, show empathy and help those out in need. So the link is down below. Even if you can't help, share it to someone, share it on your Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, and help those out in need. So guys, we got a big game coming up May 8th against Tormenta. This is going to be interesting because Tormenta just beat FC Tucson 3-1. How are you guys feeling about this? Because the last time we saw Tormenta, they are pretty much the reason why we're out of the playoffs. outside of Chattanooga, but I played Tormenta more.
Nicoletto won that game for them. Let's just be clear. I do feel that we have potentially the players to put a hurting on Tormenta, but the question is always, is Darren going to get the tactics right? Because I don't feel that today he did. I'm hoping that he makes some changes. And to be honest with you, just adjustment to the formation. Or, I mean, just in terms of the personnel, putting players in that can actually occupy that midfield, more than just one player trying to occupy that midfield. And hopefully be able to use that midfield presence to shield some of our weaker links. Like, for example, we were talking about Luke Pavone earlier, struggling a lot in this game. And in the second half, Fort Lauderdale recognizing that and exposing him as much as they did, I don't feel he gets that exposed with a solid midfield that can actually put pressure on Fort Lauderdale's midfield players. So tactics is key for Tormenta. If we can get the tactics right to be able to occupy that midfield, I think we stand a very good chance against Tormenta.
Yeah, I watched the Tormenta Tucson game yesterday. Marco Micheletto is a good player. I'm not overly sold on a lot of the rest of them. They're still, you know, rolling out there. You know, put their center back Josh Phelps up at center forward, and you know, let him be a battering ram, you know, type technique. I mean, he ended up scoring, but that was more because Tucson decided, hey, we don't need to, you know, mark anybody, you know, inside the six for a good, you know, 10 seconds, you know, straight. So I feel like any of us could have probably scored the goal that he ended up scoring. And I'm not actually exaggerating on that one. Micheletto's, you know, a good player. I still think he was, you know, the kind of, you know, he could have been a really good, you know, Riley Kraft replacement. I don't know if, you know, we've truly replaced, you know, Riley on this roster, you know, quite yet. But I think, I'm not going to say this is a must-win game yet because that's ridiculous to say, you know, for game four out of a 28-game season. But it's, you know, getting closer, you know, to that, you know, already. I think, you know, the guys aren't, you know, ready to, you know, come out and run through, you know, a brick wall, you know, on this one after, you know, two games where they've pretty much shot themselves in the foot. I think there's going to be big questions around motivation. I think there's going to be big questions around, you know, what's going on, you know, with the locker room. At that point, because on pure talent, the kicker should be Tormenta at home. Period. You know, but pure talent doesn't always win. You know, either as I think we saw, you know, today. I don't think Fort Lauderdale, you know, necessarily had better players. I think they, you know, were able to exploit mashups. You know, instead it might have, you know, maybe been a little more focused or had, you know, more excitement about playing the game. So. Big, you know, big-ish game, you know, because I think there's a week off after that, and, you know, I think everybody would feel a lot better with 6 points, you know, going into that than if we're still on three or on 4 points after four games.
Yeah, well, one of the listener questions we got was, like, where's the panic button after you guys was going to 1-10? For me personally right now, I'm not going to say I'm not at a 5, but I'm, like, at a 3-4. I just think it's just... I want to see a better first half out of the team. I feel like second half we've been fine, like we've been lively, but just the first half we gotta just get into the game a lot better. And like the point you said, Matt, about this team wants to play in the front foot, they want to play with a, you know, goal advantage. Well, in order to do that, you gotta step up and be active in the first half. You can't just sit around and just wait and just, you know, have the other team score on you. So where are you guys at right now with the panic button? Let's go to 1-10.
Mine's pretty low. I mean, like a 2 or something. It'd be higher if I didn't, you know, think that all 3 goals given up so far this year have been just massively self-inflicted wounds. Yeah, I think that's a lot more fixable than anything else, for the most part. And B, I feel a lot worse if I was actually convinced that we'd been, you know, outplayed in any of these games. Obviously, Greenville, you know, controlled you know, a good portion of the first half of that game. You want, if you want to make the argument that Greenville, you know, outplayed us, I can I'll listen to that, you know, at the very least. You know, but I don't think we were, you know, outclassed. I don't think we were outmatched. I don't think tonight this team was outclassed or outmatched. They've made a couple silly mistakes. They've you know, been able, you know, been hesitant to shoot, or, you know, haven't, you know, been able to, you know, find the right combination up front. But none of these games have I, you know, walked away thinking, oh well, that team is just better. Right? You can, you know, train, you can work on other things. You can't, you know, over, it's a lot harder to overcome just raw talent deficit most of the time.
Yeah, that's very true. What about you, Shane? Where are you at right now, man?
Me personally, I'm with Matt. I'm not really hitting the panic button. Say I'm probably out of three. It is alarming. I think the next game will let me know where I'm at with the panic button. If there is no change in terms of the tactics, I do feel we've ran out of ideas. We need to hit the panic button. What's going on? Because even though there were signs that, you know, we're definitely player for player, we're better than Fort Lauderdale, I do feel that because of that tactical mishap, it really, really cost us. And that will be with literally any team in this league. No matter how good our players are, if we don't get the tactics right and the other team does get the tactics right, we're getting toast. So at this point right now, I just want to see what their reaction is going to be. What is the reaction going to be? Because to be honest with you, against Greenville, that was a much more even game. I do feel that it was more blow for blow in terms of the play on the field. But in this game, I feel there was such a big deficiency in the midfield that it really cost us. It really allowed for a lot of mistakes to lead to the goals. So I'm looking for a reaction from Darren. But for right now, I'm not too worried. I'm disappointed, but I'm not too worried.
Yeah, one other, you know, little thing about, you know, that was what you were saying with, you know, kind of the tactics in the midfield. You know, we talked about this a couple of times. You're right about, okay, you know, Neil and Emmy, they're probably, you know, two of our best, you know, holders of the ball, passers of the ball. You know, so you think that, you know, having them together in the midfield would lead to, you know, higher possession rates. Yeah, I'm not a believer that you need to have, like, you know, like, you know, 2010 Barcelona, you know, levels of, you know, possession to, you know, be successful. I wouldn't mind, you know, seeing us, you know, tick above 40%, you know, every now and then, you know, on that though, because it gets a little old after a while. Like, you know, even if we're, you know, up to like 44, 45, you know, it, does it make a significant difference? Maybe not, but at least psychologically that would help me with all this.
Yeah, I think that will help everyone out. You know, we're not sitting there like, all right, we had our one attacking chance. Now we got to defend for 5 minutes. Yeah. It's not fun as a fan of being like nail biting all the time. We did have one listener question. Pretty much just asked about Chris Cole, you know, him coming in for Monty for this game, hoping that Monty's healthy. Do you think Chris Cole would get the start for the next game and putting Monty back in the right back spot? How do you guys feel about that?
I don't feel we saw enough. I don't think we saw enough. I think, yes, Chris Cole had great moments, especially that second chance, that shot that he rifled at the keeper, which he almost spilled into his own goal again. I personally think that deserved more of a goal than Neil's shot, to be honest with you. But yeah, I think we haven't really seen enough defensively, because by the time Chris Cole came on, it was a lot of long ball, just hit and hope, and a lot of back to the wall defending scrambles, where you can't really see somebody's defensive capabilities or just in general positional capabilities as much as you would when the game is in full flow. So I haven't seen enough to really make a decision on that.
I don't think Monty's a right back. I mean, think about it, 3 games. How many times have we seen him, you know, even touch the ball with his right foot? You know, dude seems like, you know, classic left-footed stereotype player where the right foot's there to stand on, you know, and provide balance more than anything else. So
he played right back in the first game, didn't he?
No. Him and Bologna were tearing up the left.
Before Ian, I swear Ian got hurt on the left.
Just because somebody ends up on the side for a little bit doesn't mean that they're playing that side.
I swear, I thought. Maybe I'm tripping. All right.
you might be thinking of the, you know, quality USL graphics that, you know, have guys all over the place, you know, that aren't really representative of what they really play. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you might see someone like switch, you know, as they're coming off a, you know, a set piece or something, just to be able to provide shape until they can, you know, reset or something. But yeah, I think Cole would be, yeah, fine. Yeah, I think, you know, you have to be hesitant. You know, all right, somebody comes in for a good 20-minute, you know, debut of, you know, putting them, you know, on the pedestal right away because, and maybe they, you know, haven't been scouted yet. Maybe they haven't, maybe it's just, you know, a situation where we were, you know, for the most part chasing the game while, you know, he was in. So I'm not opposed to seeing him get more time. I don't know if I'm ready to see him start yet. Kind of like what, you know, Shinier was saying, it might be a little, you know, too soon for that, but at the sub, okay. I think the other part of that question, you know, that was, you know, sent in though was, or would it make sense to, you know, move to a 3 in the back, you know, system? All of this presuming that Monty is out for a little bit.
I have been asking for this for the longest time since last year when we had Akwe, who oddly enough scored our own goal today, Venter and Ivan. I would love to see it. I don't think Darren's going to do it, though, because you had the opportunity today to go 3 in the back. Darren didn't do it. And I honestly, I can't remember a single time where Darren ever went to 3 in the back. So I don't think we're ever going to see the 3 in the back system. So I've started to kind of remove him from my train of thought of Darren and his systems.
Yeah, I don't think he's a fan of 3 in the back, probably. I don't know. But I do feel that we have the personnel to at least try that out and see how that would work. I do feel that Luke Pavone would probably do a little bit better if he's playing as a wing back and doesn't have as much of the defensive responsibilities. He might do better. So I don't know if maybe that would be an option for Darren to maybe try out for the first time to see if they can. But I think it would probably have to be after this Tormenta game to allow them 2 weeks to work that out. Because with the games coming thick and fast every week, you want to make sure you give yourself time to make that adjustment before you put it out onto the field.
Yeah, I think for me, I don't see it being a, you know, starting formation at all. I wouldn't have been opposed, you know, when you know, Monty went out, if they brought in you know, Aune instead. I didn't even occur to me that they were going to put in Cole and Spirit, who's there to make out the numbers, you know, today. So I was a little surprised when, you know, he went in. But you know, I figured, okay, this could have been, you know, time, you know, for it to make sense. You know, put, you know, Aune in, move you know, Luke up. I have no idea what we would have done about the left wing back spot in that case, but that's not the point. You know, right now, so I could see if, you know, we needed to, you know, change something up, maybe to, you know, chase the game a little bit more late. That could be, you know, a time for 3 in the back. But yeah, like you guys said, I would be stunned if we ever saw it, you know, right from the, you know, opening whistle.
Darren's listening to this podcast is going to do a 3 in the back in the first game. Darren's like, I'm going to show those guys I can do this.
I think it would have worked okay to. If they had put in Aune, maybe you put Matt Balduc over on the left and push Luke up so that you have Matt and Luke playing as your wingbacks with your 3 in the back. I mean, maybe it would work. I mean, again, I do feel that Luke needs to be pushed up a little further. I don't think he should be having as much of the defensive responsibilities. At least not right now. At least not fresh into, oh, you thought you were going to be a backup. You're starting now. So it's like when you drop that on his plate, you need to give him some time to ease into that. So I think a full wing back position would actually suit him better.
Luke is like that part-time worker that walks into the job, and the guy was like, so how do you feel about being manager?
Basically.
Caught him up. Wait, what? I'm going to do it.
So I don't know any players that are going to be like, nah, I don't want to start.
Yeah, nah. So, yeah, anything else, guys, before we wrap up?
I saw a couple other questions come through. We hit a lot of them already, but I'll just read through them real fast. We can re-hit them real quick. One of them came through. Why do you think Trezaghi's in this new position?
Like you said, like he's pretty much is the best on the ball player that we have outside of Neil. So that's why I said why. But I think it's. I kind of want him back in the striker hole. That's where all 10 of his goals came from. Right now, I'm not seeing the assist that I thought we were going to see. So put him back in the striker hole for me.
I don't know. I don't feel that as granted, yes, he won MVP. But as a team, the Kickers did not score nearly as many goals as they should have last season. And I think that is because Terzaghi is a player that likes to come back and get involved with the buildup. And when your striker comes back and gets involved with the buildup, there's no more outlet. And I feel that that's what Darren is thinking about and saying, all right, come back and get involved with the midfield so that we can actually have a striker up top. And so I do feel that him playing as a 10 is good, but you need the balance of Victor Falk in there. And I think having Neil on the field took that away.
I've said my piece on this before. I like Emmy as close to the goal as we can get him. So, I'm not going to repeat that once again. Yeah, there. Other questions I saw. Why did Darren play Olix out on the wing? Any thoughts, guys?
I think it just comes down to. Really, just Matt didn't show up in the first two games. Like, it really no production. Alex, when he came on, I mean, granted, he scored a goal against Revs too, and he kind of exposed Greenville's back line. So I guess Darren gave him a shot. And her name was still kind of being written in this tournament. It'll be interesting to see if we kind of go. Let me ask this question to you guys. Do you think Darren might go to a false nine? Where you have a midfield of Neil, Zaka, Flock, Emmy kind of playing that false nine, and Bolaños and O'Allen kind of playing, not like as a winger, but more as like left forward, right forward kind of thing. Do you think that might happen?
I mean, I guess it could. Yeah, I think the complications of being, we're playing with, kind of a center forward. All right, I think, Hernán, I think, has to be a center forward. I don't see him fitting at another spot up there at all. Stanley, I think, is probably a center forward. Emmy, I think we've established, or I'm just going to project out my opinions onto you, that he's a center forward. I think Olex prefers to be a center forward. So we've got a lot of guys who kind of want to occupy the same space. So how do you make that fit all together? I mean, good to have a lot of options, but sometimes too many options ends up hurting too.
I think in that situation, what you need to do is you need to get yourself into a set high up front three. And I do feel that this team would do well maybe with a front three of Olex, Bolaños, and Stanley, with literally Terzaghi right behind them, creating and pulling the strings. And I do think that we can do more danger with something like that than rather pulling those wingers back a little bit, getting a midfield four with another defensive midfielder in behind, and then a solo striker up top. I think that creates too much complication with the attack. if you have three players that want to be up front, playing up front, with Terzaghi in behind them who wants to push up but still wants to be involved with the play, you're golden. Then we get more goals. We get more goals throughout the season.
All right. I think we hit this one already. Does El Tanque have enough wheels to play up front?
No. Next question.
Like to see him pick up another gear or two. And then last question I saw, why did we sign an OCB keeper?
Okay, look, in all fairness to the boy, he was probably the bright spot on that OCB team, and we kind of already mentioned that Richmond needed a backup goalkeeper, someone that can challenge but not necessarily start. It just so happened to be that he had an OCB moment. That's what we're going to call him from now on, is OCB moments.
Yeah, I think plenty of good teams have picked up players from bad teams in the past and made them into good players once they were surrounded by other good players. So goalkeeper, obviously it's a position where you get a lot of, you can either look like the star pretty easily, or you can very, very easily look like the chump. Unfortunately, today it was the latter for Austin Avisa. But I don't think they bring him in. I don't think they put him in game three if they don't really believe that he has something to provide. I mean, you think back to the previous years, we didn't see Rice until we absolutely had to see Rice. We didn't see Johnson or Broomall, at all, except for that half of a game where we absolutely had to see them last year because the cure literally couldn't go anymore. So I think that shows they have a little bit more confidence in him, and hopefully it was just a terrible first game.
Yeah, I'm glad it ended the way it did with that save. That might be a little bit of a bright spot in the situation, because you got to think about it. Like, if he's thinking about all of the mess ups, but his last action of the game is a save like that, we're looking at a situation where he might be able to build on that, and next time he comes out, he might come out with a tiny bit more confidence, because I messed up, but I was able to make a save,
At the same time, I'm hoping we see Akira on Saturday.
Oh yeah, me too. We want Akira back between the sticks.
It's just so funny that we're talking about Avisa. He just liked our tweet about he brought OCB to Richmond. Oh god. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, but he's what, 24? Still a young kid. At the goalkeeper position, not like he's more experienced than that. But that is that. Anything else before we wrap up, guys? I know it's late, but anything else before we wrap up?
Nah, I think I'm all good here.
Yeah, I mean, you got the opportunity, like Elliot said, hit up the below GoFundMe. I won't get into the personal politics of GoFundMes in the first place, but below's great guy. Help him out if you can. Obviously that's far more important than any of this other stuff we've talked about today.
Yeah, most definitely. Important. Well, as always, listeners, if you want to reach out to the podcast, you can on Instagram and Twitter at RiverCity93. Go down, rate our podcast, give it a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And as always, guys, we'll catch you guys on the good side. I'll let you later. We'll catch you in the game Saturday.